Yes, being on a system of swings and mids and days meant that you could look down the road to Christmas of next year and see who was going to be on duty when. And a great many of the people on crew worked other jobs. Yeah, they worked other jobs. They could do that because their schedule was fixed. They worked at Walmart or whatever.
Okay, so was your position only 2 years because of the level of mental
circadian rhythms were turned to garbage. Sleeping at odd times. The other staff people who worked 9 to 5 and had Saturday and Sunday off, of course, didn't, because you worked on a 6-day cycle and you cycled around. You had a longer weekend each weekend when you came off a day shift, then you had 3 days, and then the 4th day you were back on the swing. And swings. Well, were the easiest, but because everybody in the mountain went home, all the staff people were gone. You know, swinging and the whole mountain yourself, except your crew were there, except for some other intelligence people. All these things were there.
What was the communication system between yourself, St. NORAD, in Washington, then to make a decision of a...
We had, there were several tracking systems. Several. Had to have all the systems in NORAD. For instance, once when I was up on the dew line, a solar flare had totaled our communication. And so we were unable to communicate with 49 South, nor anybody in Canada. That was one of the minor flaws in the system, which they overcame with a backscatter system. One of the things that solar flare did was interrupt communications, especially remote communications, with the dew line. And it would also limit our satellites to a small degree, because they would have to turn their antennas so that they were not so exposed to radiation and dust.
Was Prime Minister of Canada involved at all on any level of an incoming threat coming from the Soviets, especially with...
They didn't sit in, Canadian ops didn't sit in on the sink circuit. You know, Canadian Chief Pacific and Canadian Chief Europe. White House sitting, but I don't recall if there was any Canadian sitting at all.
Was there any?
They would receive it as it came down, 22nd or 3rd, because Canada would come they're not in the advisory circuit when they threaten this person to see. They get it through operations, yeah.
So then those...
It wasn't their different letters. Back then, the White House was in it because they were a primary target.
SYNC NORAD then have ultimate authority for fighters to deploy nuclear weapons, nuclear warheads to disrupt every threat to the city?
I'm not sure I'm following the question.
Well, if SYNC NORAD directs...
If we detected some inbound missiles, NORAD would advise that you could flush all the fighters because they belong to him. You could flush other people's resources, but if he said we have inbounds, then SYNC SAC would bring up his weapons and prepare to launch his bombers.
Well, I just meant that...
SYNC NORAD didn't command that, but it was a conference call, decisions were made. SYNC SAC would put us in his ships to sea. SYNC Atlantic would send his ships to sea. People would, you know, be doing defensive things for survival.
Well, what I meant was SYNC NORAD has ultimate control of NORAD defense, and NORAD defense has ultimate control.
Well, we had their weapons on the interceptors.
Right. So my question is, did SYNC NORAD have the authority to direct those two to deploy?
No. Oh. They were under the control of the U.S. Air Force at all times. And if we flushed the fighters, and if the SYNC wanted a... plus with all arms, theoretically we could, but it took so long. Loading nuclear weapons was a very sensitive business. It was slow because there was so much security involved. You rolled the weapons out and strapped them onto the airplanes. It took forever.
So
you have to have them up, you know, if you're going to launch. We had nuclear armed airplanes on alert, but they never flew. They had doors in the room. They were guarded with all the cops and police guns and stuff.
So those on 2 minute and 5 minute alert weren't the ones?
No, they carried just conventional weapons. The armed airplanes. Never got up to the alert status beyond an hour.
Was that ever a concern for you when you're recording to SYNC NORAD, who reports to SYNC SAC and U.S. Air Force
and the
deployment of nuclear weapons? Was that ever a concern for you then?
Not personally, no. I was part of the system. The boss said, "Flush." That order. It was part of the system. There was no U.S. Air Force, Canadian Air Force. We're all one Air Force.
Right, but what I mean is, if you're telling SYNC NORAD and that information of a attack is dispersed through other fields in the U.S. military, which ultimately leads to nuclear deployment. Did that ever like cross your mind, or did you ever think about that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, when I had a false alarm, it all went up to the highest level, maximum twist factor. Well, it was pretty exciting. That's all. Some tense times in Europe, and the Soviets were particularly truculent. we go passing all the stuff on the border. Which factor is right is the arm to everything. The arm things up the end of the runway. It's up there, right? Pack of bombers appeared on their radars coming out of Siberian bases. We got ready.
So then, working to the day-to-day level of operations, there must have been a level of intensity all the time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Right. This, especially as the command director, because there were things happening all the time. You know, including such things as volcanoes, earthquakes, things that are going to affect some military function in far regions of the world. You have to react to that too. But we had lots of checklists, big books full of checklists, and that's what the exercises were, so you could really say that one, pull it out. Flip through the checklist and, you know, between a conference and all the saints, what to tell them, how to tell them, and everything, of course, is authentication codes.
Are the Canadian politicians pretty oblivious to this level of surveillance and defense that we had?
I think they're pretty ignorant of things military. They still are. When they say, pull out the troops, that plays well with some of the electorate. Not feasible unless you want to hand it over to the Taliban. Right, hand it back. Bring your pals in and they'll try that. And pretty soon you're going to fight them here. And, that's the way it was then. Trying to get nuclear warheads for the Bomarks and F-101s that we had already acquired. Electrically won and lost, and that sort of thing. And it was.
So,
the average MP doesn't have a clue about Canada's military. It's like there was people in the Defense Commons Defense Committee. Not ever having been to Afghanistan, they say, oh, we can't get security to allow us in. A bunch of balls. But nothing but fear holding back.
So,
well, it's the same with politicians in the U.S. federal. Interested in deciding to close the base in their state, you know, then they get very excited about things military, but other times only as potential votes.
Now, was there ever massive cutbacks towards NORAD on the Canadian side that impacted any of your positions?
Oh, yes. I suspect that, I don't know, but I suspect that when we opted out of this missile defense system, that a lot of our people had to sit out on meetings and things.
Now,
whereas when I was a CD, I sat in on everything. I was third year. I sat in on it. Theoretically, I mean, said no form, I wasn't supposed to be privy to it, but couldn't function without it. Got told it anyway.
So did our, I think it was 72, we had the EMD clause in our NORAD renewal agreement?
Belgium. I didn't have a clue about that.
Well, when when you came back, did that affect you in any way of Canada not being involved in? I know it was still in very much the research stage, but
yeah.
Did that limit Canada's role in NORAD?
Still have, maybe I'd have in yourself a bullet with a bullet.
So, when, even though you were out of NORAD and retired, when, I was just wondering if you could give me some military insight on when Reagan launched his SDI research program. There seemed to be a bit of political turmoil in Canada about us maintaining our sovereignty and not being involved in this program. Was that just politicians at work and it really wasn't going to involve NORAD anyways? It was going to involve more USAF?
Well, we were in the middle of Star Wars, for instance, of course. It would have put us right in the middle of it. And how could we opt out of something we're right in the middle of, no matter what they say? Those are incoming and those are interceptors and they're going to meet overhead. We're involved. But this other, more recent Western missile defense, I think it's largely adversary still, except for the missiles on the Aegis ships, which are really their defense missiles against the air-breathing threat. Well, for some people, the Patriot system sort of works.
Well, it seems that SDI was concerned strictly with non-air-breathing threat, and
yeah.
NORAD's linked strictly with an air-breathing threat, and it seems that the politicians link NORAD with SDI. Does that get back to the politicians not really knowing what
exactly.
is going on militarily?
Exactly. Tell the difference about air breathing and non-air breathing.
And was there ever a time when you were a commander there at headquarters that Canadian policy really affected you in your position?
No. Only when Pierre Trudeau visited and they pulled out all the bells and whistles and stops. He impressed the hell out of them, really. In his NORAD briefing, he was looking at, they were telling him about a satellite, and it was so many Lumiere presentations, all the bells and whistles. He looked at a satellite and said, "What does that ion counter do?" None of the generals could answer him. But the captain briefer said, "Sir, that's it detects, as you probably suspect, it detects detonation." So they were all very impressed with Pierre. He charmed the hell out of everybody down there. That was the only time.
Did you ever see a lack of spending on the Canadian part being made up by the Americans? And I guess that might have been later with the...
Yeah, not really. When they started reducing the fighter force and turning all their defense and most of their stuff over to the guard, there must have been some effects because guard guys are all civilians. United pilots and stuff. Good. I think the Guard is probably one of the best air forces in the world, better than the regular. joined the guard squad, they issued you an F-106. That's all you ever fly. You can't help but be the best in the world at it because you fly it all the time. And so when we went sent fighters down to William Tell, we always had a competition in Canada. The Brian Trophy and whoever won that amongst the interceptor squadrons in Canada went to William Tell, which was Zach Worldwide shoot and really in competition with Guard and regular force and defense. And we knew that the Guard were the guys we had to worry about because they were so good. Because they did it all the time. We stayed longer than squadrons, and so we were pretty good. My gang from Comox won the gold. That didn't happen very often. The people who gave us the greatest double for the guard, they did it all the time.
So then they still provide an adequate defense even though bomber or interceptor forces were being diminished. Okay. Is there any final thoughts you'd like to instill upon me?
No, I don't think so. Military life was very good. I don't miss it a lot, but I understand a lot more about what's going on and what places we can get briefings by people. Once we had a briefing from an F-18 squadron commander from Cole Lake, that gave us a talk by my certain groups, Lunson. And I said, there is no Soviet bomber threat, really, anymore. Agreed? He said, yes, that's right. I said, how do you keep your young guys motivated? There's no threat. He said, listen, we got a bunch of guys between 18 and 25. We give them an F-18 or get motivation. They all want to be in the air all the time. And the threat is lower worldwide. But you know, when we send a bunch of F-18 guys off to the Persian Gulf, they were delighted. Warrior, they got to use their training. The same models.
And what role does Canada have now with NORAD 2006?
Not much. Except part of the surveillance. Not much of a part of that. Because what's the threat?
Well, I want to thank you very much for your time today. I think I have enough, and I may come by for another interview if you're up for it, but we'll see how things go. But I wanted to thank you very much for spending time with me today, providing the insight.
My pleasure. Don't often get a chance to tell lies and hero stories.
Well, there's plenty of eager ears up here at UVic, and I think this program's good for the university.
Yeah, I think it's oral history. You know, it sounds like a terrific idea. I've never sat down and talked about wartime years in history. That's history that's lost. Most of the guys that I said with them, I said, are either very young, and those very young people are now my age, and very many of them are dead. But the guys who were the backbone of the merchant navy were the old guys, too old for military service. And, they're all dead. Aside from the few who wrote books about it, it's all gone. People would appreciate it. killed all these traitors in Canada and turned them over to a Crown corporation called the Park Steamship Company. And we delivered an enormous amount of stuff to war theaters. And they couldn't have their war without us. And people kind of forget that. How do you have a D-Day without transporting all your people? How did we keep England alive? Well, as I said, that's toxic.